Democratic presidential primary candidate Bernie Sanders underwent surgery for a blocked artery, forcing the 78-year-old senator to temporarily cancel campaign events. A statement from his campaign on Wednesday said, "During a campaign event yesterday evening, Senator Sanders experienced some chest discomfort. Following medical evaluation and testing, he was found to have a blockage in one artery and two stents were successfully inserted."
Dr. John Martin managed to diagnose his own cancer through a smartphone app. He was testing an IQ ultrasound device, pioneered through a company called the Butterfly Network, which he believes could revolutionise healthcare around the world. The IQ unit works in tandem with a smartphone app. It's reportedly the first handheld, whole-body ultrasound system, which makes medical imaging accessible and affordable. One-half to two-thirds of the world's population has no access to imaging, according to the World Health Organization.
Washington can now hit the EU with tariffs on billions of dollars worth of goods, after the World Trade Organization ruled on Wednesday that the EU had provided illegal subsidies to Airbus. The ruling gives the U.S. the green light to impose tariffs on $7.5 billion worth of European exports, but threatens to trigger a tit-for-tat transatlantic trade war as the global economy falters.
WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's October the 3rd, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day getting underway. Lots going on this morning in the world of business. We'll hit some of the numbers after a rough day yesterday on the stock market. We'll get to the Opening Bell market desk in just a second for the numbers, not only from the U.S., but around the world. Later in the program, what does artificial intelligence have to do with the country's leadership in economic matters? They're having a big summit out at Argonne Lab, and Rebecca Willett will be here at about 5:38 this morning to give us an update on where things stand. The University of Chicago is one of the big players in all of this, and we'll tell you how this impacts you a little bit later in the show. First up this morning, it's Thought Leader Thursday here on The Opening Bell. Rod Murray is here from Associated Bank. We've got lots to talk with about the economy and banking with Rod. There's a new trend, too, about wedding loans. People are actually taking out loans to finance their weddings, which have become more and more expensive. We'll talk about that trend with Rod as well as some other things in the banking world as well as we get going this morning. First up, and the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic as we move through the hour here this morning. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The Dow Jones Industrial and S&P are off to their worst start for a quarter since the Great Recession began in 2008. The second straight day of losses yesterday, and the Dow lost big, dropping nearly 494 points. Investors are feeling bearish and amid ongoing signs that the economy is weakening. In the first 2 days of this month, the Dow has lost more than 800 points. And payroll company ADP says there is some modest growth in jobs, and it appears that sector is slowing as well. We look at the markets this morning, though, and we're going to try to gain a little bit of that back. Dow futures are up 81 points. NASDAQ futures are up a 35. S&P futures are up about 11. Everything's up more than a third this morning. In Europe, markets are generally mixed. In London, lower, and Germany, lower. In Germany, down by nearly 338 points, almost 3%. In France, a little bit higher this morning, up by about 0.5%. In Asia, still a couple of holidays for the Chinese holiday there. The celebration of the Communist Party. The Nikkei, though, in Japan is lower by nearly 436 points, down 2%. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong is up just about 0.25%. And oil in the United States is at $52.53 a barrel. A couple of stories as we begin this morning. Walmart is going to start testing several health care pilot programs to see if it can lower the cost of health insurance to workers. Starting January 1st, some Walmart employees in Arkansas, Florida, and Texas will be connected with local doctors so workers don't have to rely on word of mouth or social media to find a doctor. Stores in North Carolina and South Carolina will test concierge service to address billing, fix appointments, understand diagnosis, and find a provider. Walmarts in other states like Wisconsin, Colorado, and Minnesota will be able to use video chat with a doctor from home for about $4 per chat. This is a test that could be expanded nationwide if it is successful. The U.S. is planning new tariffs on European aircraft. Senior officials from the U.S. Trade Representative says new tariffs will take effect October 18th on goods from European Union countries, including aircraft and agricultural products. The levies come after the World Trade Organization gave the Trump administration the right to put tariffs on nearly $7.5 billion worth of goods from the European Union after the administration claimed several nations were giving illegal subsidies to the European plane maker Airbus. Several U.S. airlines are coming out against the tariff. Delta released a statement saying the tariffs will inflict serious harm on U.S. airlines. JetBlue says the tariffs will have a detrimental impact on its ability to compete. There are a couple of plants in the United States that might be affected by this, so there is also the chance of some job losses because of these new tariffs. Microsoft is showing off its new Surface Duo, a folding smartphone that runs on Android. The phone features side-by-side 5.6-inch screens that are connected by a hinge. The company says it will launch it in 2020. The announcement was a surprise at its annual hardware showcase. The company says it's teamed up with Google to combine the best of Android elements with Windows 10. Microsoft's last smartphone with its own operating system did not do well and eventually was discontinued. Let's begin this morning with Thought Leader Thursday, and Rod Murray is here from Associated Bank. Rod is the Chicago Market President at Associated. Rod, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning, Steve.
So an interesting story. I know the U.S. pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement, but there was a U.N. meeting recently, and the idea of responsible banking came up because there was a number of banks, international banks, that have signed on to these principles for responsible banking, as they're called. It sounds like a good idea. What's going on here?
Yeah, it is in line with the Paris Agreement, as you said, and it was timing on the UN General Assembly that took place in New York in September. Right? It's called Principles for Responsible Banking, and it was, I think, originally there were 28 financial institutions across the world that started this, and to date, I believe the number is certainly in the hundreds that have signed on, that essentially is committing to and promoting sustainability. You know, sustainability is a very broad word, but sustainability for environment, for your company, what you do, but also for the financial institutions. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? It means probably, you know, providing more funds to companies who are engaged in sustainable capabilities.
240 by last count, mm-hmm. According to this article, if financial institutions worldwide had signed on. The U.S. is lagging in that a little bit. Do you think that's because we pulled out of that agreement?
My guess would be has a little bit to do with it. You know, sometimes I think we're a follower on the global side of things when it's on the banking side as well, but. Yeah, to your point, I know Citi had signed on to it in June or July. I believe that there's one other bank in the U.S. that I recognize that has signed on who promotes a sustainability. But by and large, of those 240, I'm pretty sure that the vast majority are international and certainly European and Asian banks.
A big part of this is the transparency of how things happen in banks. I know that's generally not a thing that banks like to do is be completely transparent. Give us a sense of what that would mean on the banking level.
I think it means a lot more disclosures, right? It's going to say disclosing not just what you're doing as an institution, the things that you can control, but probably transparency on who you're providing either grants to or maybe even disclosed lending to on that side of things. So that's what the transparency is.
And so that would give all the stakeholders involved the idea or at least the information they need to decide whether or not they want to continue a relationship with the banks.
Right. And you just mentioned, right, stakeholders, and they're a key part of this. And that could be a reason maybe why the U.S. is lagging is maybe the engagement on the stakeholders is maybe a slower education or maybe there's pushback there. I don't know for sure.
You're almost caught in between a rock and a hard place, aren't you? Because as a bank goes, you have to deal with all kinds of stakeholders, and not all of them are aligned on the same ideas.
Right. Stakeholders, then throw in the regulators, and all the banks in the world and the major banks certainly that have signed on this are subject to regulation. You throw a few more spokes in it on who's looking at you, and you're not just beholden to one party. You're beholden to many.
We'll stay tuned on principles for responsible banking. We'll see how that unfolds. I want to move on to something else. This has been in the news quite a bit over the last couple of weeks. The Federal Reserve of New York has been pumping money into the repo market to add a little liquidity in some of those financial areas, financial markets. Talk to us a little bit about why we should be concerned about this, if we need to be concerned. What's happening here?
Yeah, so this is, you know, kind of a one of those, I use the example, it's something that we never hear about, never talk about until something happens. And nothing's happened really in this market for 10 years. You know, it's like your, you know, it's like your furnace, right? Your furnace is just kind of hums along and it's great. But boy, the minute it breaks, it becomes really imperative to you and it gets your attention. So there was essentially a shortfall in liquidity versus capital. And it happened in September that the repos, let's start here, they kind of function as a short-term collateral-backed interest-bearing loan. So the buyer acts as the lender and the seller acts as the borrower. And then the securities that are being sold are the collateralized. So goals of all the parties are met, you know, from security and the liquidity standpoint. Happening at the end of a quarter, there was just the, you know, all bad things maybe emerged. You had quarterly payments, the tax payments that were due, and you had also some settlements in the Treasury. And all of a sudden, there was a shortfall of liquidity, and it caused the rates to spike up to 10%.
The last time that we had to use this, the U.S. had to use this, was at the around the 2008 financial crisis, right?
Correct. Yeah, that was the last time. So yeah, it's 10 years plus.
A lot of criticism over how the Fed does things from a lot of different corners. This is really an example of how the Fed is supposed to work, though, isn't it?
It is, and there's still going to be some criticism of the Fed even after they did pump in. I think there was $75 billion a day for about four days that they pumped in. So that is what they're supposed to do and how they're supposed to do it. And then the next question is how can they maybe keep that from happening again? And they're talking about things that they can do. I think a standing overnight repo facility is one of the products that they're putting out there that could be a bridge to always kind of bridge this, you know, liquidity and capital need. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what the total here is? I know it's been billions of dollars, isn't it?
In the that
the Fed has pumped into this market liquidity?
Oh, yes. It was, like I say, I was up to $75 billion for 4 days. I don't know if I have the exact number, Steve, but okay. Yeah, billions.
Something that we should keep on our radar and watch, or no?
I think it's something that we should know about and see what they're going to do, you know, not looking back, but how they keep it from happening again. And it just, you know, it's not quite quantitative easing, but, you know, that could be, it's being compared to that on how they work with that. And what's the outlook of the banks and the dealer brokers, financial statements, and the capital of the Fed?
While we're talking about the Fed, I wanted to get your thoughts on where we might see the Fed fall in October. After the last time you were here, we talked about interest rates being cut again. It certainly looks like we might have another cut before the end of the year, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's certainly what my tea leaves and our tea leaves say, is that it's a very good chance, and I think the markets are building that in.
From a banking standpoint, that would be bad news, right?
That would right. be bad news. Yeah, on something we call net interest margin, right?
Sure.
So, you know, it depends on if you're a borrower or a saver on whether you think that's good news or bad news. Mm-hmm. But in an environment where we kind of spiked up and now we anticipated more, and instead the reverse has happened, and the anticipation is not just before the end of the year, but next year, certainly you're starting to build in a couple of potential decreases as well.
There was another story that jumped off the page, too. It was in Forbes. And I don't know if this is something that Associated does, or you've seen this trend developing, but getting a loan to finance a wedding loan, is that a real thing?
It is, and I'm going to be careful not to get myself into trouble here. So it is a real thing, and no, we don't have the wedding loan that we're forecasting. It's mostly, I think, fintechs that are doing, or lenders are using the fintech platform to do it, where it's specifically marketed that you can go out and get a wedding loan, marketing it that is it cheaper or easier than your credit card, or you don't use your credit card exposure then to do it. So it's being used.
One of those fintechs, LendingTree, that was mentioned in this article, has seen 184% increase of wedding loans from 1 year to the next.
Right. I, you know, were, if you remember the Field of Dreams, I think this is, if you build it, they will come.
Right.
So the reason that the percentage is so high is it's out there and available. So people will use it now where it wasn't available, six, seven, 8 years ago.
So do you repossess the wedding? If something fails, do you repossess the banquet items? What happens?
I don't know for sure. I'm guessing that these are all unsecured loans. That's why the rates are what they are, which are pretty high.
Right. And an unsecured loan, talk to us a little bit about that, because it's. I remember this being a, people would say, well, you just, it's a personal signature loan. You could get just a real quick short-term loan, something like that. That's sort of what we're talking about in the traditional bank setting, right?
Right, right. An unsecured loan, personal signature loan, you're not putting collateral behind it of some kind, whether it's your house, your car, your mutual funds, your investments. It's being done on your credit scores, on your credit availability.
Is there some danger here in doing some of these loans? I know we've talked before about the fintech space and versus the banking space, but it seems to be that especially if you're getting $60,000 or $70,000 to do a wedding for a wedding loan, you might want to be a little careful about that.
Yeah, and that's why I said I have to be careful not to get into trouble. I believe that it has potential. Look, people want to celebrate a very special day and a very important day, so. They're spending money for it. I think that the difference here, or my take on the wedding loan, is you might spend more than you otherwise would have because you can get this loan. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a potential danger flaw on it is when times are good, it's what you're going to pay. If you ever have times that are hard, then it's kind of like the credit card debt or other things. This is something that you had for a night, and it's a great celebration, but you might be paying that off over 5+ years then.
Anything changed in the things you're hearing from the CEO crowd, from the C-suite crowd about the economy, how the economy's doing?
It's really a mixed bag, Stevie. It's so hard to say what the indicators are. One day you read some indicators and things look great and talk to the CEOs and the C-suite. And the next day it's, we're seeing a slowdown here. Certainly the factory numbers, weren't robust that just came out recently. But, then you look at the consumer side and you say we're not into big trouble there. Consumers are still bullish and they're still healthy and still spending money as an overall whole. So the C-suite is cautious. I think that if you polled enough people, you'd get, I don't know if it's 50-50 on the CFOs of, is there going to be a slowdown? Is it the dreaded R word? I don't know if that is. Certainly it's not going to be like, we just talked about 10 or 11 years ago, but things could slow down and they probably will. But is it a quick slowdown and then do we ramp back up, or is it something that's going to log on and hold on to our economy for a while?
Okay, Rod. Well, how can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Sure, Steve. So they can email me at rodney.murray@associatedbank.com or call 312-544-4515.
Thanks as always for coming in. Good talk.
Great. Thanks, Steve.
Rod Murray is the Chicago Market President at Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. Remember, you can listen to our past conversations at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page. You can also follow Associated Bank over at Twitter at Associated Biz and head over to AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership to hear more conversations and meet our thought leaders there. And we do it for you every Thursday right here on the opening bell.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program, everybody. An artificial intelligence summit is underway in Chicago with industry leaders from energy, transportation, manufacturing, and healthcare, public officials and researchers, all from the Department of National Laboratories, Department of Energy's National Laboratories, gathered to discuss how artificial intelligence and other related techniques can support business transformation and drive the economy. Argonne National Laboratory in Lamont is the one of the hosts and organizers of this. And joining us this morning is Rebecca Willett, a professor of statistics and computer science at the University of Chicago. Professor Willett, good morning. Welcome to WGN.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning.
This is an exciting thing, and I know there's a lot to get into the weeds about here, a lot of specific ways of describing artificial intelligence. Is it also referred to as machine learning, I think, is another way to talk a little bit about it. Some big ideas are under discussion this week here in Chicago.
Yeah, that's right. It's a really exciting time in the whole field. There have been innovations in things like getting computers to recognize the content of an image or to understand your speech, like when you talk to Siri on your iPhone, that, you know, 10 years ago we would have just thought were pipe dreams. And so these successes have just generated a huge amount of excitement and energy in industry and academia and the government.
I want to dive into some of these things because I don't think people realize just how significant artificial intelligence is into solving some of the big problems. Like, for instance, using artificial intelligence to perhaps find new treatments for disease, to find the right kinds of drugs to battle diseases.
Yeah, that's a great point. So we've had these early successes that I've mentioned, and so now people are asking, well, can I take the lessons that we've learned in those settings and translate them to new applications, such as in healthcare? And there have been some early experiments that show that there's a lot of potential, but there's still quite a few things that we have to figure out. So if I'm using a computer vision system to search for cats on the internet, and occasionally I'm shown a dog, it's really no big deal. But if I want to use a machine learning system to look for tumors in a CAT scan, and I miss a few here and there, then it's much more serious. And so when we think about trying to take these ideas and bring them into new areas of technology, there's A, a ton of potential, but B, also a lot of open questions that make it a very interesting research area and a great way or opportunity for industry and academia and government to really be working together.
Is it just the computing power here? And I know regular listeners to this program will know that we've talked to Argonne before about this giant supercomputer that's about to go online there. You already have a lot of computing power at Argonne as well. Is that how artificial intelligence does it work, by powerful computers?
Yes. So a lot of the technologies that underlie one form of AI, deep neural networks, some of those core ideas were developed decades ago. But we made these huge, giant strides in recent years, in part for two big reasons. One is the availability of these big computing resources, like you just mentioned. And the other is the availability of data that we can use to train these machines. So when we talk about machine learning, basically the machine is learning from examples. And so if we have 100 examples, it's kind of hard to learn. And if we've got millions and millions of examples, it becomes much easier. But then we need the computers to process it. And so in this day and age, we're just constantly collecting data. You mentioned earlier trying to figure out how to diagnose disease. Well, every time you go to the doctor's office, they're creating electronic health records or digital charts that are describing your symptoms and your treatments and what drugs you've been prescribed. And so now the question is, can we use these giant computers like the ones at Argonne combined with these massive data sets to learn something new, to find new risk factors for diseases or to even identify best practices that we weren't sure about before?
One of the main goals here is to make all of our lives a little bit better, but also to transform business, drive economic growth. I know those are some of the marching orders that you guys have been given. Talk to us a little bit about that last part of it, driving economic growth. Why is AI important to that?
Well, I think we're all familiar with some giant companies such as Google and Amazon and Facebook and Apple who have, you know, contribute a lot to economic growth. And at the core of many of their businesses lies AI. So we already have some excellent examples of how AI can play a big role in economic growth. But that's far from the end of the story. The potential of AI has applications in healthcare, as we've talked about, improving educational practices, accelerating how quickly we can make scientific discoveries that then industry can capitalize upon and lead to new products. And so, yeah, there's many, many different ways in which the work that we're doing is going to lead to a lot of economic growth and growth of companies and job opportunities for large numbers of people.
And even if you don't sit in front of a computer, or even if you try to avoid a computer all day long, artificial intelligence probably plays a role in your life. I'm struck by what's happening in the city of Chicago. We have this thing called the Array of Things happening, where it's controlling. We have a little bit of artificial intelligence controlling lights, pedestrian movements, other things that are happening day in and day out in cities like Chicago. Talk to us a little bit about how some of this is happening, and we don't even know that it's there.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think I've read something recently where, you know, our cars, most of what's going on there is controlled by computers, and much of that is sort of fine-tuned using these kinds of machine learning ideas. And yeah, you're right. You're seeing it even in some new models of refrigerators, or in the things that would help control the power grid. And some of these seem like consumer products that, you know, can just make our everyday lives a little easier. Other things can just make our cities more efficient. So hopefully I can get from UChicago to Northwestern or to Argonne with less time in traffic through the kinds of systems you're describing. Or hopefully the city of Chicago as a whole can be more efficient in its use of power and electricity and water. And a lot of the ways in which pricing is set, or in which we even, you know, supply different systems within this ecosystem can potentially be improved a lot using machine learning and AI.
You at the summit today will have a session on the challenges of modern AI. Give us a sense of what those might be. I know we've heard a lot of people, big names in science, shout out some warnings about artificial intelligence. Elon Musk among them. I know there have been a couple of others as well. Is that one of the challenges, is making sure that we keep control of artificial intelligence?
Yeah, I don't think we're quite at the point of the robot apocalypse. Right now, there's still a lot of major limitations associated with AI. And so in my mind, when we think about trying to proceed with caution, it really means trying to understand some of the foundations of these different technologies. So we've kind of seen them work in isolated cases, and it's exciting, but it's sort of like a proof of concept. Like, conceptually, these ideas may work, but I wouldn't be ready to use these systems in a missile defense system, for instance. And even when we think about integrating them into something like a self-driving car, I would want them to be probed a little bit more closely. So if I come up with some computer vision system and tell you you should install it in your self-driving car because it's worked great in all of my laboratory tests, you'd probably be pretty skeptical. You would say, well, I don't know if your laboratory tests are anything like driving around the streets of Chicago. And so one of the things that we worry about is trying to understand, you know, what kind of mistakes might be made by these systems before they're ever made. What are the security vulnerabilities associated with this? Can somebody somehow hack my self-driving car? Is my privacy violated? Is someone going to be able to track my every movement just because I'm occasionally using a self-driving car? So when we talk about sort of a more cautious approach to AI, or trying to understand the AI foundations, what we really mean is trying to understand these kinds of challenges and thinking about how to develop new methods that are going to safeguard us against catastrophic mistakes.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point, and we use self-driving cars as an example. With all of what you've just said, it feels like the timeline for some of this happening is not so close in the distant future, that maybe we're a decade away or more from some of that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, with self-driving cars in particular, I believe that there's still a lot of progress to be made. There's some studies, researchers who are saying, well, maybe we should consider, you know, a more incremental approach, like using shuttle services where you're on a predefined route and the environment's more predictable, and work out a lot of the kinks there so that we can gradually get to full-scale deployment without incurring any, undue risks, which sounds like a pretty reasonable strategy to me. So in terms of just have each of us having our own self-driving car in our garage and never needing to drive again, I believe that's many years off. And that's not to be pessimistic. I think these are very exciting, and there's a lot of fun, interesting challenges and economic opportunities ahead. But I also think I'm very happy that people are being cautious about this.
Yeah, and that's comforting to hear that the work is being done to make sure all this stuff is perfect, or at least close to perfect, when it's launched on all the rest of us. Rebecca, we appreciate you being with us this morning. A very exciting time for all of us. Artificial intelligence at the root of a lot of it. We appreciate you coming on this morning and sharing some of it with us.
It was great chatting with you. Thanks very much.
Rebecca Willett is a professor of statistics and computer science at the University of Chicago. The Artificial Intelligence Summit wrapping up today in Chicago, brought to you by the Argonne National Laboratory and the Department of Energy at the core of some of these meetings and a lot of these sessions happening today at a hotel here in Chicago.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street this morning after a rough day yesterday in the markets. Dow futures are up 59 points, nearly a quarter of a percent. Up nearly a quarter of a percent on S&P futures, and NASDAQ futures up more than a third this morning. A mixed day in Europe and a negative day in Asia this morning in world stocks. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Spent a good day yesterday in Madison, Wisconsin at the World Dairy Expo, where light rain may have helped the crowd because farmers couldn't do any field work at home, so they turned out for the World Dairy Expo. And last night at the honors banquet, these people were honored. The Dairy Woman of the Year, Janina Seemers of Newton, Wisconsin. Dairyman of the Year, Steve Maddox of Burl, California. The Industry Person of the Year, Dr. Randy Schaefer, University of Wisconsin at Madison, Department of Dairy Science. And the International Person of the Year, Dr. Julio Braque from the Dominican Republic. The show will continue through Saturday. Several sales, including the Holstein Classic that Tom Morris has put together for 31 years, and all of the breed shows in the dairy industry on schedule for the days through Saturday. Another startling number from China. China's hog herd fell by half in the first 8 months of 2019 because of that outbreak of African swine fever, and will likely shrink by 55% by the end of the year. This report coming from Rabobank that said in the report it expects China's pork production to fall by 10 to 15% in 2020 on top of a 25% drop in the current year of 2019. Still no vaccine to stop the spread of African swine fever. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of stories from the business ticker before we leave you this morning. Jeff Bezos is staying atop the list of richest Americans. The founder and CEO of Amazon ranked number one on the Forbes 400 for the second year in a row with a net worth of $114 billion. Microsoft founder Bill Gates was second on the list, followed by Berkshire Hathaway CEO Warren Buffett and Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg. Some newcomers to the list include Bezos' ex-wife Mackenzie, Roku founder Anthony Wood, and Tim Sweeney, whose Epic Games company is behind the popular Fortnite video game. Forbes says the Americans on the list are worth a record-breaking $2.96 trillion. Some news about Tesla this morning. The electric car maker delivered a record 97,000 vehicles globally during the third quarter, an impressive milestone that still fell short of investor expectations, set a new hurdle for Elon Musk to get over. The company's stock tumbled more than 3% in after-hours trading on that news yesterday. Also this morning, Google is committing to a White House initiative designed to get private companies to expand job training for American workers. The CEO of the company says the Google will make an announcement today during an appearance at the White House. with the president's daughter, Ivanka Trump, to oversee, who will oversee the administration's worker training efforts. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Thursday, October the 3rd. The weekly report on jobless claims is due out today. First-time jobless benefits. Economists are forecasting 219,000 workers filing for initial jobless claims. The report out mid-morning. We'll also get a report on factory orders. The Challenger job cut report is due today. PMI services index, the ISM non-manufacturing index, the EIA natural gas report. Earnings today from Costco and PepsiCo. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, October the 3rd.